Okay, I've got 9:09. We'll go ahead and call this special meeting of the Coryell County Commissioners Court order, noting that all members of the court are present. For those of you that are here in person, if you've got an electronic device, we'd ask that you place it on silence at this time. And for those of you that are participating by Zoom, we would ask that you place your device on mute until such time you need to address the court. We'll begin this morning with a word of prayer. God, our Father in heaven, we're so thankful to be able to gather here today peacefully under your watchful eye. Lord, we are so thankful for the many blessings that you continue to bestow upon us. And Lord, we come before you humbly asking for the forgiveness of our sins. Lord, we ask that you place your hand of protection over the first responders, both locally and globally, that protect us here on earth as you watch over us from heaven. Lord, we ask that you place your hand of wisdom and guidance on this court so that we may do here on earth what honors you in heaven. We ask all these things humbly in your son's holy name. Amen.
Amen.
In place to our flags, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. The next item on our agenda is the public forum. Citizens may address the court on any matter other than matters concerning county personnel or matters under litigation. Each citizen will be allocated with 5 minutes, or 5 minutes with a total time not to exceed 30 minutes. Is there anyone here in person that would like to address the court this morning? Yes, ma'am. If you'll please stand and state your name for us, please.
I reside at 265 County Road 272 Oval. Mr. Weddle is our commissioner for that area. I have a few things. Of course, I'm the only one of our group. Obviously, they have shown up. I believe a couple of them are on the Zoom call today. One of the things is I understand that y'all have already stated that you're not going to repave our roads in that area until they're done with Twin Caverns. However, the wear and tear on my vehicle, I have already had to replace tires that were only 1 year old due to the state of those roads. I have had approximately 8 flat tires in 1 year. That is ridiculous. On the corner of 272 and 274, if any of you have been out in that area lately, it is all crusher pines. The rock is non-existent. We're expecting rain. I hope y'all understand. I'm sure the county road and bridge here understands that when that gets wet, it's going to be slicker than snot. And we have fences and trees right there, and somebody that is not familiar with the area is going to go right through one of those fences. It could really potentially harm somebody. So on that, also down, we all know that the flood took the road away down around Coryell Creek, this, that, and the other. I don't want any more dirt roads out there, but please, can we at least get down there on the one side at the corner of 266 and 274 and get what's left of that asphalt up? It's almost like the Grand Canyon. I know not to fly through there, but my son didn't. He just got back from Poland. He's active duty, and now he has to replace a U-joint on his car because he hit it not knowing, because while he was gone serving our country overseas, all that happened. I didn't tell him it happened. I mean, we had other issues. I'll take care of his son while he's gone. Now I take care of two of his sons. So it's a lot of wear and tear on the people that are in that area on their vehicles. I can understand from approximately the 273 area down around in front of Blair's place. I can understand you got a lot of trucks coming in that way. But I hope y'all understand that a majority of those construction trucks that are coming in are coming through the road to their main entrance. I know because I've almost had head-on collisions with them numerous times because, sorry, I'm a Class A CDL holder. Those trucks take up a lot of road. And when we're coming around a blind corner, there's no place for them to go or anybody else to go. And honestly, on a paved road, it's safer for them. Keeps them from jackknifing, from hitting loose gravel. One of the other things is that there's rumored that we have another subdivision that is being considered on the other end of the Twin Caverns part where they divided it out. It's my understanding that they're wanting to put multi-million dollar homes on there. Y'all, we can't afford our taxes. The majority of us are living paycheck to paycheck. Or in our case, we're living paychecks for paychecks out. We're so behind. We can't afford taxes going up in our area any more than they already are. And if we go and we add these multi-million dollar homes down there, what do you think it's going to do to the people that can't afford that? There are people out there that can. I can't. And I know a lot of us can't. I really would like for y'all to consider not approving another subdivision in that area. Our infrastructure is not there. We've seen it during the droughts. It's happening all over Texas. The infrastructure is not there for all these people that are moving in from other states. I get why they're moving from certain states because we're a great state, but we've got to really start limiting. I understand that it's great for the taxes. It's great for everybody to get a raise, our county officials, this, that, and the other. But, y'all, we just don't have it. And we go into, you know, another streak of several years without rain. We're all going to be without water. We really need to start watching that and our approvals on these subdivisions. Let's make sure that the infrastructure is there. And I can speak for almost everybody in this county. Unfortunately, nobody showed up to me. But, you know, it's just the cold, hard truth. And I know y'all deep inside that y'all know this, too. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Ms. Blanchard. We appreciate your comments. Is there anyone else here in person that would like to address the court this morning? Seeing and hearing none, is there anyone who is participating by Zoom that would like to address the court this morning? Seeing and hearing none, we're going to move on to item number five on the agenda, which is to consider budget amendment number 18 for FY 2024. I believe Mr. Wood has provided a copy of that to all the members of the court, and that would be, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the closeout amendment for budgeting purposes to wrap up our accounting. We got a motion to approve budget amendment number 18 by Commissioner Matthews, second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion concerning item number five on the agenda?
I have a couple of questions. I'm on the page number, couldn't get there fast enough. So it took me a little while, but I kind of figured all of this out. The ins and the outs and the pluses and the minuses. We only have a couple of departments that went beyond their 100% budget. But I have one, and maybe you can just explain to me, maybe I don't understand. Page 24 of the expense. Am I reading that? I mean, we had Coryell City Water System. We had 135 in the beginning budget,
yes,
current budget.
So when we closed up, when 23 and moved into 24, I anticipated them to turn in some bills. They never did. So that lowered their budget for the next year based off of my incorrect assumption. Now, the money was there. They never spent the entire amount that was allotted to them. But they did present bills for the entire amount this fiscal year.
Okay.
So yeah, the money was there for
right.
It, it's just the budget wasn't there.
Just an accounting nightmare.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, or not a nightmare.
No, because I guess that money from last year went into the reserve,
yes,
and then this year we have to suck it out. Or, yeah, so it comes out. All right. Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of those. I think the same thing in the page 22, the county grant support. Kind of the same situation.
Yep. Had more expenses than we did than we anticipated.
That's a lot more expenses.
Yeah. We took on a lot more grants.
Yeah. Okay. All right. The others were pretty, command, I think we did a pretty good job. There's a lot of people. I love the ones that can manage it wonderfully, 99.7% of budget. And one that was 99.9. And then the jail, the big. So did they end up, if I read it correctly, that's on page 7. So budgeted 2.8.
Well, we originally budgeted $2,020,000.
And we did
some budget amendments throughout the year. So the left column, beginning budget, then the current budget, brought them up to 2.8.
And then, yeah, under the prisoner board, they ended up 3.1.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any further comments or discussion concerning item number 5 on the agenda? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 6 on the agenda is to consider issuing the RFP, which requests for proposal for professional administrative services in connection with application for hazard mitigation grant program section 404 funds. I believe Mr. Bell sent that out last Thursday. Is that correct? Wednesday, Thursday?
Yeah.
One of those?
Almost there. Bell, I think your email said you're almost there. Is this, is this pretty much the?
So there will be some changes in the, and I haven't had a chance to go back and double check all of the contact information for the small business and whatever all the acronyms.
Historically underutilized businesses.
The MBDAs and some of those some of that contact information has changed. I used the one that we had used for the CBDG MIT as a starting point, and I know that some of those have changed. So I got to go through and clean that up before we put it out. I actually was looking at some of the other ones, and I may put all of that out and put it in a separate document. Not necessarily put it as not in the body of the RFP itself, but as a separate schedule or a separate document. So I have a list that we've compiled over the last 3 years, probably, of direct solicitation and the special groups, for lack of a better term. And so we have solicitation lists now that we have prepared and kept adding to and kept up with, because some people have asked us, to add them to our list. And so we have a unit group list. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
I need, dates.
Have a few dates. Number of copies.
It's that kind of thing, whether you want to submit it electronically or in writing, on the top of the proposals, those kinds of things. The last one that we did would have been the RCP program, probably the last RFP kind of like this that we put out. Maybe, let's see. Got to double check. I've been in some conversations with the GLO and regarding closing out our HMP. The rules change from time to time. And I think that I have all of the mandatory contract provisions that are required under 2 CFR 200 in the exhibit attached to this RFP, but I have to double check that and make sure. So there's a question that came up in the review of the rights and procurement, which it was in that, it was accurate. I just got to make sure of that same one I just compiled.
Good. Yeah. I saw you had the highlight about how we want to submit it. Unfortunately, I think it's got to kill some trees. I like them when they give us their proposals in binder form, if you will, because that way I can lay them out and compare them versus trying to go back and forth on a, or the county would have to print them out. So for conversation purposes, I think I fell asleep a couple of times, especially towards the back part because of all of the stuff.
For like the RFP for the RCP, we gave them almost 30 days to respond. We issued it on August 8th and had our responses due on September 5th. So we gave them almost 30 days. I think we need to give them at least 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
In that case, it was probably right at 4 weeks that we gave them to respond. I think that so this program, the applications be due to the, I think there's two application deadlines. One was in January, one was first part of February, is my recollection. So we got time to give them, 4 weeks to respond. That would be my suggestion. But I looked at some, there have been some other counties that have put out some RFPs recently that take like 12, 14 days to respond. I don't know. Seemed like an awful quick turnaround for something like this to me. But.
You give them 30 days, that'll be plenty of time.
Yeah.
Put too much pressure on them. But.
That's our commission report meetings are in December 10th and the 24th. I have to talk about that one.
How it would line up most logically with our commissioners' courts meetings for November. We meet on the 12th and the 26th. So one potential date, if you wanted to execute a decision on this at the earliest, would make the and to give them roughly 3 weeks, give or take a couple of days, November 22nd. 21st, November 21st, 22nd as the submission date as a deadline. If the court chooses to push that into the December time frame, our first meeting in December is December 10th. And to support that, December 5th or 6th, which would be a Thursday or Friday, which again aligns with the 21st, 22nd of November, being a Thursday and Friday, either one of those. And then that would give those respondents approximately 5 weeks. So you're really looking at a 3 week timeline versus a 5 week timeline. But then it gets to what Mr. Belt was alluding to, that applications for submission I believe are due in February. But there would be some work that need to happen in January. from a county standpoint, things tend to slow down in the December timeframe. So it would be my recommendation that we issue that RFP with submission deadline of no later than November 22nd, and those be submitted electronically and on thumb drive, and not, I understand what you're saying, Commissioner Weddle, but it would be more advantageous for the vendors to be able to submit that electronically, and then for us to present, you know, print our own copies, you know, as needed, as opposed to, you know, taking up their time, you know, additional time. Now, if you want to push it out to December 6th, and they provide hard copies, then, I mean, I don't see there's any issues with that whatsoever.
I think the way the verbiage was written, Mr. Bell, correct me, I mean, it's an or, right?
So the, so like for the RCP, for example, we had them provide the information on a thumb drive with five paper copies.
Right.
Yep. And with this one,
it says or in red.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of.
I just left blanks in there. You know, tell me when I'll put in there, whatever, so we can get on my, yeah, on thumb drive or submitting the copies or both. Like I said, the RCP, RFP had they provided a thumb drive and five prepared copies. That was so if I was going to be a commissioner's court, we'll have a bound cover presentation type proposal.
Yeah.
And then on a thumb drive so that we can have it electronically to comply with all of our, so we have scanned in and things document and have it for all of our reporting requirements that we have after the fact. So it's reasonable to deal with that kind of thing. It's just cleaner and neater than scanning a mail.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Things that they deliver.
And so I mean, they're going to do it. They've got it electronically anyway.
Right.
So it's yeah, just
so most of these have been. Small enough that they could email it's not like it's going to happen. It's just going to be a document.
Right.
We've done that in the past. Just have an email. Then by a certain day, then we know them, get them in, board them out, turn out copies for them, and hold them and put it down.
I'd make a motion to approve the issuance of an RFP Baseball Administrative Services in connection with application as a mitigation grant, Section 404 funding with a deadline of November the 22nd with one digital copy and five binders.
Second.
Is anything good? Okay. All right. We've got a motion to approve the RFP with stipulations identified by Commissioner Matthews and second by Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion concerning item number six?
Most final idea, just for my purposes, the action date on that proposed action. Mm-hmm. We're not obligated to take action the next time, but when would our next meeting be after the 22nd?
Would be the 26th of November.
The 22nd, what day of the week is that?
It's a Friday. And if you would leave that at 2 p.m., as you've got stipulated here, for the timeline to get those to us.
2 p.m. on the 22nd, Judge?
Yes.
Okay. And then
a potential action item on the November 26th meeting would be to identify a vendor.
So in Okay. Any questions or requests for clarification must be sent submitted in writing by email to address above. It's 3 business days prior to the deadline. So that would be, so they would have to be received by Tuesday at 2 p.m.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. So this one, I didn't have a provision in here for notice of intent.
I did not see one.
Okay.
If this particular one, I don't know that, unless that's a statutory requirement, I don't know that we necessarily need a notice of intent to be submitted. No, that's, yeah, I mean, that's, I mean,
the score sheet, proposed score sheet is going to have to be cleaned up a little. I do not know that cleaned up yet. The only thing that's changed with the program name on top of that scoring sheet, it still has the, I'm going to change those wherever where it says GLO. I will take that out. But it's that those scoring criteria and points satisfactory with the court.
Yeah, I think.
Okay. Any other discussion concerning item number 6? All right. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. I say motion carries. Item number 7 on the agenda is a workshop discussion concerning the damage inventory list for DR 4781 to include, but not limited to, prioritization, cost estimates, and matching fund sources. Discussion concerning the Resilient Communities Program grant and information needed to update subdivision regulations, and discussions concerning information needed for any other grants. And again, as the note indicates there, these discussions may be discussed concurrently with those topics as a whole. So I think it'd be most appropriate to start with the list that Mr. Latham has so graciously provided. It is a printout of what he has color-coded, kind of grouped for projects. And we can pick up from there as to how the court wishes to move forward. And as a note, we want to make it clear to the court that DRRP that has come up most recently, those projects are at a $500,000 minimum, $2 million maximum, with a not a required match, but a recommended match of 10%. The projects that fall under 4781 for FEMA projects are at a 25% match. And projects that may be considered under 406 or 404, which are the two kind of mitigation elements, are also at a 25% match. Mr. Latham, so we don't sit here in total silence for I don't know how long. Do you want to just talk us through kind of where you are in your restoration, key areas that you worked on and kind of how you've grouped some things here? Because I think your mentality has been more of like, which ones are the closest being back to restored?
So, mainly more concerned about mitigation cost goods because we're still kind of waiting on them. This list right here is just the ones we submitted for damage that blew. The other one is the list FEMA's working with. We're trying to get cleaned up. There's some other roads in there that we did not receive damage on. They're still working through that right now.
Yep.
To highlight out. And I think for some of that come from was some of our shovel ready projects. We kind of put in that original list. Mm-hmm. FEMA still has that on their sheets. We kind of started taking those off. You know, they didn't really receive enough damage to justify mitigation.
Yeah.
So these, the blue list with the numbers beside it there, that's our actual cost to date on those roads, whether it's emergency work
or temporary.
The percentage it is to the certain point, back to temporary permanent status. FEMA had sent out several different site visitors. They're still trying to compile their information. We requested them to send back their site visit notes so we can start matching that up right beat up. So right now we really don't have a good list of mitigation, temporary, emergency, permanent. We're still waiting that information to be funneled through. We had submitted all the damage sites by the deadline. We're good on that. Now it's just refining that. That's probably going to take a couple more months, honestly, to get those PWs start to form. You made the comment about some of them that were closed. We've kind of got some packets of fund groups together in-house. We presented to FEMA. They like that. They're going to kind of start refining them, see if we can get paid on them, low-hanging fruit, sooner rather than later. Still some couple months out probably on that. I guess
those would be ones that we self-certify. Is that correct?
Yeah, and then they've been to them, and we have the documentation.
Okay,
package them together to PW, and we're pretty much done. We've already done the work. Most of the work has been on the topic. I guess this is the intent of the workshop, more focused on the mitigation side of it and the cost to the county. Is that kind of what we're here for today, or
it? In my opinion, yes, because, I mean, whether we mitigate anything or not, we've got a cost match just to put everything back like it was. And I think we've made some huge progress there, but we're going to have to look at, what is the overall funding to be able to just put everything back like it was. So then the next step to that becomes, okay, then what do we mitigate? Because then there's another step to that. And we talked about this before about benefit cost analysis, models, some of those things are built into the FEMA portal that we could plug in. So if we can start identifying at this point, what projects, what items on the damage inventory list we believe are most beneficial to address as mitigation projects, and be aggressive on that, because then we're going to just have to pare it down. I mean, that's what it amounts to, because there's additional cost with mitigation versus restoration. So that's what I would look for at this point, is which projects on the inventory list do we believe are most advantageous to be mitigation projects? And then we can come back and look at what really can we afford within the mitigation list.
How we do less burden to us if we have a contract out. That's going to cost more money. You know, there's pros and cons in that.
And this is where we're going to lean heavily on you, or I'm going to lean heavily on you to be able to say, you know, what can you do and still maintain our maintenance program? I mean, we've still got to maintain roads. We got projects that are, you know, we're behind on even. So there's got to be a balance there. I don't think it's realistic to say Road and Bridge can do all of these projects and maintain our maintenance schedule.
We're already, like I said, we're behind currently. This has been, we had a few things we were behind on, and then all of a sudden, this event, and we're still trying to do last year's maintenance schedule.
And a new budget. So at the end of the day, I know I believe historically, we've done better than 90% of the work in-house, and we reaped lots of benefits from that. This court is going to have to make a decision as to how much can we do in-house, and then how much are we going to have to contract out? And I don't know what that number is. I don't know what that amount is. I'm not going to pretend to tell you that. But that's the balance of trying to repair and restore the damage that we've suffered under 4781, as well as maintaining our road maintenance program.
Like, well, the big area that we need to look at is the difference of 406 and 404. A lot of the 406, we probably are going to be seeking in mitigation of the FEMA's, going to be the smaller end, not requiring a BCA, you know, the 50%. A lot of them projects wouldn't burden us too bad. You know, kind of an example of that would be, say, a low water crossing at 100 square feet of riprap around it. Well, it might have washed out right beside it. You know, we're going to ask for mitigation of some of those, and instead of 100 square feet of riprap, now we have 150 square feet. Well, that's a simple, you know, numbers add up, go through, people agrees with it or disagrees. And there's not a lot of strings attached to that. If you say now it's 100 square feet of riprap, we want to go in and put 10,000 square feet of riprap to grout it, well, then that's a long, you know, you're having to do BCA, hydrology, probably things of that nature. I don't have a good list of those right now. We're still working on that. But, you know, where that breaking line is on those mitigations. Because that's the one side in the 406, the mitigation that would be in the PDOT system. And the other one would be the 404, if I have remember right, which would be, you didn't have to receive any damage there, you just have a problem, large problem, we're eligible to go in for a competitive grant, which then, that's when our contractors explained to us that, you know, probably going to get one or two of them, if I remember correct from the phone call, and they can be larger projects. Can't remember, how does all that support? Was that?
BCA is required. You got to have 1.1 minimum, 75% payout. H&H and all that stuff can be done during phase one. It doesn't have to be done up front. Application is available now. That's what we just issued an RFP to go out for grant administration services. Require a grant administrator to have us apply for those funds. They thought that we were likely to receive one or two projects under that because of the amount of damage that we sustained. But we're going to have to be very particular about the projects that we picked for those because they've got to meet that 1.1 PCA. If they don't, you see them
don't have the rest of the paperwork for them. It's competitive. It is, you are not required to have been damaged during one of the declarations.
So really, we just need to be working off this yellow sheet, because this is already, the blue is already what you've done in experience.
Well, the yellow, there's projects in there that we just claim damage.
Right.
We're providing that.
Right.
The blue is what we claim damage on.
Right.
And a dollar amount beside of this emergency, temporary fix, or
right.
The blue is our in-house list. It's right. One we keep more accurate. After our meeting last week with FEMA, this list here, there was some confusion between the different entities, and we're cleaning that one up.
Right.
From a member sitting here, I'm gonna, I guess, express my, Brandon and the judge have been more intimately involved. You know, whether, I mean, I went to a couple of the kickoff meetings, and man, when you guys, you know, when the 404, 406, and even you get confused a few times, could we not, because ultimately what this body has to make a decision is what is our level of pain? At the end of the day, it's how much do we want to go for? How much is our matching fund, you know, liability? How much can we offset in-house? And at the end of the day, how much money is this court going to come up with to make up the difference? I think we can, you can spread it out over two budget cycles at least. Is that correct?
So the 404 projects, I don't really think there's a lot of need to worry about designating those projects right this minute.
Yes.
So if we larger projects, they don't have to be projects that were damaged during this event. They're going to have to be in very particular locations. They're going to have to score high on the BCA. They're going to have to meet a distinct set of criteria to score that high. We're going to have some projects that do, but they're going to be big projects. They're not going to be 406 projects.
Right.
These four, you know, as Mr. Bracken said, 406 projects, there's 25% match on those as well. But they're projects that are, as best I can tell, almost every time, maybe every single time, add-ons to projects that we already are restoring. And we want to upgrade them just a little, beef them up just a little, for lack of a better term. And there is no, and there's not going to be really an application process for that per se. That is going to be that they're going to recommend most of those to us as we go along through these BWs. That is our application for them, is these BWs and negotiating those projects through those BWs. So, and, you know, until we get further down the line in that, it's going to be weeks before we hear back from them, is what we've been told. And I believe them. So if you look at those projects and the numbers on those projects, I don't know how many of them there are. I don't know how much potential 406 there is on those projects. But if you got 100 projects and there's potential of $10,000 on each one of them, 406, and times 25%, you can kind of do the math. Is that a number that you live with, or is that a number that you can't? It's a number you can't live with. And now's the time to tell Mr. Latham, whoa.
If I did the math, that was $1 million. $250,000 would be the county liability on that.
And so I totally made that number up. I have no idea
right. What
that number is. I don't have any idea.
For every million, it would be, you know, the county's obligation is $250,000.
But I think that Mr. Latham could certainly, before he, it's going to be a few weeks, at least. They said weeks. They didn't say a few weeks. They said weeks.
Weeks.
And there's no few or several or couple attached to it. It was just weeks. So it could be 7 or 8 weeks. It wouldn't surprise me if it was that long before we hear back from him. Well, at some point, the Clayton was going to have some direction of
don't exceed.
Don't agree with them when you work this 406 stuff because you're killing us. But in some percentage of that, it's not going to be cash. They're going to be able to do it in kind.
Yeah.
It can be.
Right.
The 25% max on those projects can be in kind. And so the math is, it's going to be complicated because it's going to be different on every project. Some projects, he's not going to be interested in doing it because it's going to be, foreign concrete or whatever, something he can contract out quickly and easily and more efficient. And I don't know that y'all are ever going to be able to sit down and go through the list sitting in here and project by project tell him what to do. Y'all are just going to have to give him some sideboards and say, stay in these. Good luck.
That's kind of what I was alluding to, was we've got to just get that number in our head. You could almost, Dusty, would it be fair, sort of, based on history, to say if there's a 25% match, then you guys would probably cover about half of that?
I think some of them would probably cover nearly
the outlook. So in other words, if we had $1 million, 25% match, be 250. Has it been typical that Road and Ridge will?
Typically, in the past, we received $1 million. We did it all in house.
Did all in house.
And we weren't out of funds. We just took it out of our labor burden. One thing to consider on this is they're starting to try to package these feet up just in projects. We're going to start sorting these as live projects. So, if it's something just to get it back to permanent status, we're going to group all them in one feet up. It doesn't matter if the road's where it's at geographically. The mitigation ones or culprit ones, we're going to try to package them together. Then we'll have dollar amounts, and we don't have to execute or sign off on that. We could review them and say, hey, here's a PW with 20 of these mitigation ones in it, and here would be our costs, and here's if we did it in-house, and here's if we went out. We could refine the numbers better after they issue the PWs to us. We've never seeked this much mitigation in the past. Right. Most time it was just a one-off, two-off projects. We did them in-house. We didn't come up with funds. Now, the 404, my understanding is we probably would not touch those projects. They would just be contracted out. That would be a straight.
I agree with Brandon for this. I mean, 404 is something we're going to talk about.
Hey,
on that, we got
3 years, honestly.
So what kind of bumper, you went to the bowling alley now and you're really, really bad and we need to put the bumper pads on the bowling alley for you. I mean, look, I'm sitting here, it's frustrating when we talk about things that I'm not that, versed with. So I've got to rely on the experts who have been engaged, fully. I just want to be able to give you some parameters. What do you think is a good, what do you think would be good parameters?
Hard to answer that right now.
It's even harder for me.
We've got about 26 miles of base work ahead of us. We're trying to catch up on, so put that on the back burner and try to do these because that's going to affect our amount of obligations to the cash. If we don't try to do a large percent of this in-house, that's going to affect maintenance side of it, because we have to allocate the labor to doing this versus doing our road work. That's.
Well, I've personally expressed my feelings before. Anytime, this is just, it's not maybe the most popular, but anytime that we can utilize whatever you want to call it, found money, money we get back, even if we have to pay, a portion or forego some standard maintenance. In the long run, our citizens would benefit from those mitigation projects because then it's going to, yeah, long term. I mean, it's either, you know, long term, short term. You know, these projects are more long term. Rehabbing a road, because we know it's going to, you know, fail. And again, that's we heard about it today. You know, and these are some of the problems, you know, we face. We'd love to be able to pave all the roads and, you know, clean them all up, but also we have these. Anyway, I you know, my opinion is that any time that we can get assistance money, even if it costs us some money and we can spread it out over, you know, a couple of budget cycles, I think we've got to go for it. I mean, we were prepared to do it for the SRs. I won't even call it what the name was anymore. I mean, we were prepared to do that. What has changed? I mean, other than a different name of the project. I mean, the different name of the program.
Well, I mean, I think one thing that we don't need to lose sight of is the base effort is not road improvement. Base effort is recovering from the damage that we've suffered. So, you know, without being a programmed cost or anything like that, we're using other people's money to be able to just repair to a state that we were in, even though some of it would be better, but we're repairing to restore it to a state that it previously was in, and it's going to cost us 25% of whatever that total amount was. Okay, that's cost to our taxpayers to, you know, however we fund it, just across the board to get to where we were before May 5th. Understanding that because it's going to be newer, there's going to be some, you know, it'll be a little nicer.
Benefits.
You know, there's some benefit. So then the mitigation side of it then becomes the, what are we doing and what are we identifying as a priority to make it better? Those, and I think it is those projects that historically, and I think Mr. Latham does have some data that he can provide us, but areas where in, you know, 2008 and 15 and 16, that over the past 10, 12, 15 years, we've seen repeated damage. Well, that wasn't just FEMA money that we've utilized for that, but that's taxpayers, you know, whether it's, you know, a direct contribution or an indirect contribution by the county, we've had to tie up, you know, our road and bridge department and expend resources, construction materials, fuel, gas, man hours to repair those things. And so there has been a cost to that. So I think when we start looking at, you know, what is 406 and 404, those items that have had the greatest cost impact to the county should be the ones we address. And you know, again, 404 is on the competitive side. It's got to have a BCA established with that. A little bit more in depth, and probably some, those should be projects that maybe are a little bit more expensive overall on the mitigation side. 406 does have a limited amount of money in it. I mean, it isn't just a, you know, huge pot that's out there. So then the next step becomes identifying what projects within the 4781 disaster have again been, you know, repetitive, and by addressing the mitigation on those, and I don't know what that number is. I don't know if that number is 10 projects out there or 5 or 7 or whatever. But I do think it's important that that I think, you know, each of us needs to sit down with Mr. Latham and say, hey, within your precinct, within your area, which ones are the most strategically important to you that have been, you know, a drain on, I shouldn't say a drain, a repetitive issue. And I'm not going to say it's going to be equitable. I mean, that, you know, I'm not going to say that Commissioner Taylor has four in his precinct and Commissioner Basham has 12, because we all know that Commissioner Basham has the best roadways in the entire county. So he probably gets none out of this whole thing. So I'm not trying to beat a dead horse, but I think at this point, we're really at the point where we need to start looking at, you know, in your individual precincts and saying, hey, which projects do you think are prime for mitigation? Because we're going to have this whole laundry list of just repair. Again, we've got a whole laundry list of this whole list is repair. And I don't even want to see the price tag on it. That makes me shudder.
There is no guarantee either. We have a PW road up and we contract it out. It's 25%. The bids could come in. Let's say if we didn't do them in-house, yep, and went to contract some of just the repair work, recovery work. There's not a guarantee it's 25%.
Yeah.
I mean, the bids could come in higher, could come in lower. I mean, 25% is based on quantities, hours, and their FEMA rates, which are good for us because, you know, they pay $100 an hour for a road grader or whatever it is. But, you know, for a contractor to move out there and do one of these small PWs, they might charge you.
Yeah, especially if it's a small job, you can kind of come up with
PWs, it's, we almost have to do them in house just to somewhat try to stay even if we can.
Well, and I think that goes to how we write them up and, you know, how we group them. Again, you know, like you were saying, you know, every one of these items on here isn't necessarily an individual PW. Okay. And PW is project worksheet, correct? I mean, and what it is, it defines the scope of work for what you're doing for that particular project.
It's typical PW judge might have, say, five different roads in it, and then each road might have 3 to 6 locations of repair to it. We try to group them in similar repairs. Mm-hmm. That's not always the case. You might have one off in there that has a chip seal or something over here, and the rest over driver roads. But, you know, if you kind of look through here, deal with column that says fund group, we kind of start packaging them together initially. Fund group one,
yep,
those are all similar type repairs. There were ones that are pretty far along. That if we package all those in fund group one and the first PW, we could probably get funded for it pretty quick. The permanent work's nearly done, or it's some very close stage. There's some in there we haven't even touched. You can look at the dollar amount. So FEMA's going to go in there, and after our meeting we had with them, and go, okay, why don't we pull all the culverts out and put them in a PW? Well, for bidding purposes, like if we was contract that out, that's not necessarily the greatest, but for funding and time frame for us, that's better, because all the surface work's been done to these roads, but maybe this culvert we wanted to increase. Well, if we're increasing that culvert,
and that goes to mitigation in 406.
Right, but the upper end of the 406, not a simple one.
Yeah.
You got to have an H&H. If you wanted to put a larger culvert in here, you'd have to upfront put money for an H&H, you know, to determine what size culvert we need in there. Then they kind of, I don't know if they have to draft up the design to put in there, but there's going to be more detail than anything in the stream, anything that's water related. Riprap, you know, erosion protection, those don't require that study. As long as you stay within the blinders of the 50%, I think it's the cap, or 100%. Still a little unclear on that, because the last meeting he said, well, if it's not over 100%, it's just a, it just goes in the feet of it. You was in that meeting, right? Mm-hmm. You remember that? I mean, in, you know, not, you know, difference in the opinion there. The actual FEMA guy said, if you don't go over 100% on the mitigation, so if that project was $10,000 project, you went to $20,000 and 10 of that was mitigation, sounded to me like he said it was fine. We were always assuming it was only 15%.
So what are your funds do? Your fund group? I mean, I'm just trying to...
Another group of projects.
More gravel roads.
That's right. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Them are the ones that we did a lot of work on during that time frame. Yeah. We moved lots of material to them, got them back in really good shape.
And the far right hand column, Justin, that's what you have expensed against these
to date.
Yeah, to date.
Can I ask a question? I don't want to interrupt.
Yeah. No, I'm still, yeah.
Okay. So, Justin, when you say that's what you've expensed, is that what you've expensed your cost, or that's what you've expensed FEMA cost? I mean, your cost calculations, that's what I'm getting at. Is this for...
That's forced account.
This forced count. Okay. Yes. All right. So,
labor. So that number would...
That be is...
Larger. Yeah.
No, his number would be less.
Right. The FEMA number would be much larger.
This is kind of the FEMA calculation number.
Well, the judges, we use their, what they pay, say, per road grader.
Mm-hmm.
That's our man hours, material, and the hourly okay. rates of the machine. So that's, they call that forced account.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. That's FEMA, actual.
That's FEMA figure, pretty much.
It's not FEMA figures. That's our action. That's every man hour put into that project based on their
yeah.
Okay, I think we're there.
How they charge out.
It's in our database. We just customarily use their rate sheets.
The federal rate calculations. That's what that is.
Right.
Regardless of how you want to talk about how we budget it in house, is completely. That's a whole different topic. This is the federal rate calculations for materials, equipment, time, personnel, as to what the cost is for those damages.
Well, I guess that's where I keep getting hung up. Those aren't estimates, those are actual.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Because the whole another sheet, they're estimates. Like, you know, to get these on the permanent fix. Now, what will have to happen now is that 1.2, 1.3 million total, they're going to have to break that out and how much of it was emergency, temporary repair, how much of that gets allocated to the permanent side. You see in that other sheet there, they got category A, C, and B. That's where they're starting to break those out.
First off, that's a good job. Great spreadsheet. It's got a lot of.
Didn't think Desiree. I just started it. She's there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so you have 20 mitigations identified in the mitigation. You know, I'm counting the maybes even.
Well, and Mr. Weddle, this is not really accurate right now on the mitigation. Let Plankford and FEMA kind of do some of that based on their site visit.
Right.
So, and before then, we didn't really have quite understanding of the mitigation side of it. So, we probably have not updated that column in a while.
I'm trying like heck to get you some direction, but I'm...
It's
every time I think I've got it, then I go, whoa, I come back to the starting point. I just, you know, so I was just trying to do numbers going, okay, you know, 1,240,000, 25%, 310,000, you know, could we say, Justin, if you could do everything on this list, we'd be good with it. Yeah, I mean.
I would assume that number's going to grow 3 to 5 million, because these are just actuals.
Right.
That's what we spent from May until today.
Right. Which is what we want to try to get back first.
Yes.
That's, which, I mean, to me, that's the ultimate goal, is get back what we spent.
And that's why I started breaking those out of those fund groups, some of the ones that are close that we should submit in the first PWs, package them up with fund groups with FEMA and get, you know, 400,000 or 500,000 of that back relatively soon. Because there is a portion of this they're going to want to separate out and go, this should go to the permanent side, or this should go to the emergency side.
And I think you're already doing it. But step one, try to get some money back, you know, from what we've spent.
Yes.
We've already spent it, so there's our...
That's
our portion already in. We got to get those.
A lot of the mitigation in the 406 that we're going to look for are going to be the simple ones. Something in house that's going to save us money, but we can get credit from them for
that. You were probably going to do anyway, maybe not.
Well, no. like a prime example would be adding riprap somewhere, add more. That's going to trigger mitigation. We manufacture our own riprap.
Right.
I mean, we would not want to contract that out. We make the rock, and we've got it probably at a cost of $10 a ton sitting there, and if you go purchase that on the street, it's $25 or $30, but we'll get the credit for $25 or $30 a ton for that. So right there, we're already getting over 25% just in that
right
bag of rock.
And the same goes for, you know, the labor and the use of the equipment.
The ones that I think we'll need to produce a list on and can kind of go through are going to be the ones that are going to require H&H, going to require additional engineering. The ones that are just wrapped in the PWs that meet within the binders of FEMA's guidelines, I don't even think you guys would ever even notice them. It's not going to impact us money-wise that much. If we are able to perform all of it.
But we have to assume that you can't perform it all in-house. I mean, I want to reiterate that. I'm not trying to beat the dead horse, but I want to reiterate that it's my belief, and this is just a swag, that if we said, you know, Mr. Latham, Road and Bridge is going to take care of all these repairs, we probably would not do any road work other than break fix, you know, work order stuff, potentially for the next 2 years. I mean, if you're talking about they're, you know, fixing every low water crossing, every culvert, you know, repaving and you know, road work, road base, to everything that's damaged on this list, potentially. And I'm not saying it's a hard and fast number, but you could realistically say we would not do road maintenance. We do road repair based off work orders, but we wouldn't do any road maintenance for the next 2 years. And is that a fair enough statement? I mean, I'm trying to not.
There's going to be a level of impact, just like you're explaining, Judge. Now, whether it's 2 years, year and a half, 3, 5.
Well, that's what I'm saying is I don't know what that exact time frame is, but we would be shutting down road and bridge maintenance operations for a period of time to do nothing but these projects. So there has to be the assumption that a portion of this work is going to be contracted. I mean, there's just, or it's not going to be done.
Right.
That those are, it's either going to be contracted or it's not going to be done.
If we have that option once they issue, we back the CSPWs, we have to have a signature on them to accept them. And if we don't, we have that option of backing out at any time on them until right. we ink it. Once we ink it, then I think 18 months, once you have a signed PW, you know, then you can file for extensions.
Yeah.
You can get a 6-month extension. Kind of have to send in a narrative of why.
Just more paperwork.
And it's not that difficult. I did the extensions on the last ones, and the reason was being is by the time we got it saved, prepped, we were out of paving weather, you know, so they gave us, they kicked us down and gave us another extension. Has to be a legitimate thing. It's yeah, like, hey, we just we want more time because we're doing maintenance work, and they might not give me an extension.
Yeah. Right. Weather, material delays, like that.
Probably the hardest thing we're going to be to overcome right now currently is a few of the projects we kicked off for other things, other reasons, are now setting it a year and a half, 2 years out. I mean, here's one in your area, Bastion 344. You know, we kind of delayed that one on some grants. Starting to move to that project once we get out of western part of the county. But if we were to shut down and do this, well, that job just going to be on hold then, too. The same thing, just 272, 274. We've kind of been stalling on them for some other reasons, you know, the subdivision stuff going on out there. But there's PWs that are going to be rode up on that road that, you know, as soon as we move out of 158, 157 area, we were going to go to. You know, I think there's 26 miles of base work that needs to be performed. Once we leave 158, 157, and you know, 26 miles is takes us normally even that. We built two road building crews now, and they're covering more country. That's a year's worth of base land right there. I mean, two crews for 26 miles. If we shut down and do these, that those baseline crews are going to have to be doing this work.
And, you know, and don't lose sight as well that where grants start to mix together on some projects and stuff, you know, we still have this CDBG mitt that's dangling out there. So that's a Bald Knob Road project as well as a bridge on 274.
What's the cost share of
that? No, that's CDBG mitts 100%.
Right. Okay.
It's
huge. That one I remember because we've been wanting that one for over 18 months now.
Pencil out right like we wanted it, or
it's paved. I guess they do that in a month.
What's the month?
You know, it's still the way we contracted that, it still burdened us a little because we provided the materials, we provided the truck, and,
pretty much everything but the equipment and the land,
right? And what was that about? We'll say around $50,000 to fix charge.
40 something.
Yeah, 48, 50.
For 2 miles.
Yeah, 1.7.
Huh?
So, you know, the hidden. The
mid 20,000 a mile in 2 months.
Yeah, but that's just equipment, labor.
Right.
And water. They provided equipment, labor, water, porta potty. We provided testing materials, brush clearing. We installed all the culverts on it prior. They laid the rock and got it to the densities. Then we turned in as soon as they moved out. We sent a blade over there and finished, bladed the way we wanted the surface and chip seal it. So
So, yeah, if the land and rock and everything, we move 20, pay just for a number, 25,000 a mile, if it's contract.
Yeah. And that was low bid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I understand that.
Yeah, they range from, there's some that's 250,000.
We wouldn't use them.
Well, it would benefit. They were in the area and they worked, not moving. Right. Equipment had access. There's lots of plus.
I'm put a number in my head.
And yeah.
On some of that one.
Right.
If we decide to contract some of it in addition.
For us to do it in house, we've been averaging over 100,000. Now that's material,
everything.
That's
turnkey.
I haven't run a number on a while. That last one you did over there on Liberty and Centennial almost saved like 112,000.
A lot of it's going to depend on location too, where the pile
resources.
Yeah,
that's a, yeah, unfortunately, that's a figure we need to. And every time I've, you know, talked to the public and people, I always say, you realize it's $100,000 a mile. And that's tax money.
Don't get me wrong, working in the aggregate field for so long, I understand a lot of that.
Yeah, it's very expensive. But we keep trying to get our money back, pick low-hanging projects, and then just throw it out there. I like to spitball. You know, what if we were to kind of give Justin the guidelines? To the judge's point, cut back on 50% of, you know, maintenance, you know, in year one. What would that
look like? I don't like the idea of cutting back on maintenance. So since I've been out here, and the reason being, we've been trying to get our chip seal cycle on about a 7-year cycle. So what that means is, so in the past, they might reseal these roads every 20 years. If they get to the point they're deteriorated, that you're spending so much money in hot mix and cold patch, or they just, we're just letting them fail on out because, A, it's going to cost 50,000 miles of cold patch on it and then reseal it. Well, you just milled that up in place and redid it, but then that gets us to a production issue, you know? We don't need to miss these projects that need their reseal. That's going to, you know, it's either, you know, are we trying to look for today or look for the future? If we skip that reseal today and not do it till sometime in the future, that consequence is going to hit us in 10 years.
I would ask this because, I mean, this is, I think, kind of where it stair steps down. Is we're gonna have to come back and look at, you know, what encompasses the road. Okay, and with the understanding that that's a maybe a little bit larger, more significant projects, something a little bit more in detail. Okay, so we're gonna have to come back and revisit 404. Within 4781, then there is the pot of money that's 406. And you know, we could dump this on Justin and Justin and say, y'all come up with the list of 406.
So, but, I feel like we should be able to have that to you.
Well, I think it would be good if the commissioners would sit down and talk, you know, what y'all's priorities are for 406 within your precinct. Okay. And that's really what gives him some guidance. And then we can start to pare that down as it becomes closer. Because as he mentioned before, at the end of the day, we're going to establish PWs with FEMA. And that's going to be the defining line of what can we afford.
The lower level 406 will be buried in the PWs. Mm-hmm. Those will be the simplest. The ones that we're definitely not going to have time to be large mitigation. And those would be the ones that, so say your 406 has about three different size mitigations.
Yes.
The first and second one, they'll be burying the PWs. You guys probably won't even already notice them as long as we can perform the PWs or however we get those done. That's not an issue. It's the ones that, like say, the upper level 406 will be the ones that we might or might not be able to do in the house. And those are going to be the ones that require an H&H. They're going to be requiring some form of engineering. The 404, we don't know part of, but just y'all need to pick a number on that. Say, hey, we're going to pick two or three of these projects, submit them. It's a wish list of mitigation.
How did they
get? Well, no, I was getting to the point of, you know, as talking about the process, you know, evolving, is identifying those things that are 406, you know, that are mitigation, and granted, some of them will be in the PWs, but then at that point, we need to kind of figure out what's the impact on your work schedule and start paring down, because the low-hanging fruit, even if we contract it out, is, you know, repair and restoration. I mean, that's just flat cost. That's not cost plus, because anything that's mitigation is cost plus. That's, you know, and when I say cost plus, I'm saying cost plus from the standpoint of it is going to be a greater cost than repair and restoration. And it may just be a smidgen from our, you know, contribution standpoint, but it's the cost plus. And then we have to look at what's that impact on, you know, what the work schedule is. I'm not saying that I've got the answer there, but I think until we start really identifying, you know, and to your point, not the stuff that's the low hanging fruit, that's just some extra riprap that's built into the PW. Not that. It is, you know, having to replace an entire low water crossing, you know, just to get it back like it was. I mean, you know, pouring concrete, you know, roads that were damaged to the extent that, you know, there's got to be road base that's torn up, repaired, you know.
You know, two that come to mind, maybe for a larger 406, you're going to be winter's helicopter. 145. There's a section there that every FEMA event we've had, it's blowed out. But it's in a creek. It's going to require an H&H. It's going to require some kind of box culvert, larger drainage. But that road itself is nearly back to permanent state. But that's one I'm going to push. You know, look, we've spent, I think, $150,000 on that road in the last 8 years, and one section no longer from here to your office shows. And why don't we try to fix that? And that's one thing that's really going to look at and go, hey, your BCA is going to be there. They would agree with doing that in a 406.
Whether it's to elevate that roadway or whatever, we've got to, you know, what, yeah. But,
you know, the other one would be 315 on the river down there. We have data on it. When the river washes that road out, I don't know how to fix that one, but they might come in and have some suggestion. They were large projects that require time, engineering, more skilled crews than what we have as far as, you know, different trades than we're used to doing. Them are the ones that I would be looking at going, yeah, they need to be done. How do we want to approach it?
So is it realistic to think that each of you can sit down with Justin, kind of identify within your precinct which ones are mitigation and which ones are just flat restoration? And once we get that list, then out of mitigation, we can look at what is large mitigation or versus smaller mitigation. And
starting to kind of build those list already, Judge. Kind of waiting on FEMA's response on some of them.
And then concurrent with that or subsequent to that, we'll then take a look at, you know, what does that cost look like? Aggregate cost, you know, in federal dollars, not our budget dollars, but federal dollars. And we're going to have to balance that with, again, road and bridges, you know, maintenance schedule. And I think, you know, realistic timeline is by mid-January, we should be able to have all that hashed out, because I think PWs will have been, most of them will be have been written at that point, and we'll be looking at, you know, what, you know, some tangible dollar values, not just our swag, not just our, what FEMA has come back and said, this is what we're proposing to you. But I do think that mark needs to be on the wall, that it's no later than mid-January. That
getting the PW is going to be kind of what sets our mark. If we get them back from them by January, we have these conversations. If we get them back sooner, we can have them sooner.
Yeah.
That's what we're waiting on right now, is the PWs are getting proposed. The 404 mitigation, which is RFQ, RFP you guys are going for. I don't even know how to begin to select a project on that. I think maybe let whoever y'all award that to give us input on that. Because it's going to have to be in criteria, certain area to meet it, or even have a chance of receiving it. I don't feel like that should be something that we pick. I think we pick with them, in a sense.
Well, I think we can through this process, I think we can start to kind of identify, you know, projects that we would ask them to look at, because they are going to be the more expensive. So they're going to be, we know that we're going to contract those out, you know, and it'll become, I think, evident, you know, as we go through the list of which ones that we're just going to go, whoa, that's not us, you know.
Well, and the 404 ones don't have to be damaged, but they have to be in a certain criteria.
Yes.
I think basis on picking them should be, what's the highest scoring criteria to pick them? We need to pick the top two highest scoring ones in the county that would meet the 404 criteria. But no matter where they're at, you know, we just go with the top two highest scoring ones, because they're the odds that we'll get it or not get it.
Give us the better chance of getting it.
And I don't know where that is right now in the county, because I don't understand their scoring criteria well enough.
Well, mid-November, the scoring criteria may change. You know, I mean, really, you know, well, I'll tell you, I think.
50-50, you're right with that.
Well, no, I mean, either way, you know, it could, right. You know, the scoring criteria today, very well, regardless of what happens in the 1st of November, very well could change by mid-November. I mean, just what it is. I don't want to, Ms. Blanchard, you did, I think you had a question. And
I appreciate it, Josh, that you're allowing me to ask, and it's kind of towards Mr. Latham. As far as County Road 274 and the low water crossing, of course, y'all know what that event did to that area. A lot of livestock lost, right there by the bridge, even. But, you know, the two sections that were on either side of the bridge that we had to shut it down for a little bit because it did, you know, affect the integrity of that low water crossing. I'm just trying to clarify so I can let people know in my area, because that road for most of us is our main road to town. We have numerous ways that we can go to town. That's our shortest and our quickest way to go to town. Were y'all looking at just repairing initial plan, which I know could change? Are y'all just looking at repairing the low water crossing back to its original state? Or did I misunderstand and maybe y'all were thinking about putting maybe like a bridge, just like the one that just passed it on that little feeder creek?
Okay, well, that's a very good question. Okay, so 2 years ago, and this is a different pot of money, but it's still resulting from the floods of 15 and 16. Coryell County was awarded some money, and we identified the low water crossing on 274 because, in part, TxDOT as in-kind project that we had previously done some work on, they took the other low water crossing and turned it into a bridge. Well, it only made sense to this court, and I don't want to speak for everyone, but I believe I'm expressing this correctly. It only made sense to this court that why would you fix one low water crossing with a bridge, but not the other? So we had identified this pot of money coming down through the GLO from FEMA to fix the other one as a bridge. We have been fighting that, even though that the federal government and the state government has said this money belongs to Coryell County. You have been awarded X number of dollars. I think it's $3.4 million. Yeah. For some other projects as well. But you've been identified and you're awarded this money. Over the past 2 years, to put it very succinctly and politely, they have continued to change the rules on us. So it is still our intent to that the low water crossing that was damaged, that was blown out, that they repaired, that is a project that we've identified under this other pot of money to turn that into a bridge. That is, and I do believe that is going to happen. Please don't ask me when. I mean,
2.5 years.
Yes.
And I know that there's numerous low water crossings from my time as a teenager running back roads. And I know that there's a lot of other areas that have a lot of problems during all these floods. Even if we're not having a big flood, just a regular couple of days of rain and they start overflowing.
Well, and that was, again, I mean, we've discussed it numerous times in court that 274, by virtue of how it parallels 84, has become a thoroughfare. Right. I mean, it's not just a two-lane country road that, you know, or county road that, you know, there's half a dozen people that live. I mean, it is. So we're doing, you know, what we feel is in the best interest. It's just we're having to fight with other agencies to get the funding that we've been promised. So when we talk about that particular low water crossing, we're not grouping it at this point under DR 4781, the May floods, we're because it's already been identified.
We put it in our damage inventory yesterday.
We do. We've got it identified because it was damaged, and we've done some repairs on it. So we're going to try to recoup our out of pocket costs on it at this point, which helps us going forward, but. Ultimately, what we're wanting to do is, you know, have that same tributary on is Coryell Creek, isn't it?
Yes.
That where it kind of, you know, makes that little S-turn thing. So that portion is elevated and, you know, there's reliable trafficability, you know, long term.
Especially with Point Taverns. I mean, they're honestly going to be a lot more. And there's another spot on that road. My daughter has had a wreck there. I believe numerous years there was a death on that curve, too. When you're dropping down going towards Gainesville, when you're dropping down off the top of the hill down into the Creek Valley, there's that curve that's always blind due to the fence line that's all thrown and stuff. That's another spot that at some point maybe Rose Bridge can address that, later. That's fine, but
it's... We age all the time up around the corner.
Yes, and it gets rough as snot, and people do fly up and down that. I know I've done it, I'm guilty, but, it's a pretty dangerous little corner when you're dropping down in there.
Okay. It's kind of some very, very rough guidance. But I'm going to go back and I'm going to ask the court to get with Mr. Latham about what I'm going to call 406 major. And again, it's not the low hanging fruit of the 406s that can be grouped into just the PW, but identify your 406 majors. And that'll give us at least a starting point of, as the PWs are starting to be developed, what we might have to look at outsourcing. And then when we get the PWs back, the draft PWs from FEMA, then we can really start to look at what are our costs and what can we do in-house. Because again, if there are projects that we can do in-house that allow Mr. Latham and Road and Bridge to continue the maintenance program, we get that credit for in-kind work and, credit for costs above and beyond just our in-house cost. And those help offset matching funds on the 25% side for other projects.
So the big question on what that's going to be is when Mr. Latham would have it broken down by precincts and all that. So we should have that. Right?
Make sure I understand the question. The mitigation one?
No, the one he's talking about, the 406, the big 406.
That's mitigation.
Mitigation?
Yeah.
You said you're working on it, but you're not done with it.
Well, we presented to FEMA what we wanted already.
Well, you'd have that list for say, Mr. Basham to come in and say, what's in my precinct? You have that now, or would it take you?
That blue list has a good bit of them on it. Beside it says mitigation. Mm-hmm. Yes, maybe.
Yeah.
Remember the one we're trying to submit for looking currently.
So you have, so if we say we want to meet tomorrow and you're available tomorrow, one of us should meet you tomorrow.
Not real.
Off what you have.
Because there are some in Langford to put into. We're waiting on.
Well, that's my question. When would be the earliest time we can still have a meeting? You know,
honestly, we're probably looking at a month.
But that's what I would.
And it's going to be very few of the large ones. They're going to have to meet the BCA. It's going to come by that I just didn't want to go. Now, depending on what they do, some low water crossings. I got some Dura Rock out there. I don't know what the status of that one is, but same scenario. Subdivisions went in, low water crossings in between the entrance.
Right.
Blew the low water crossings out. We're looking to try to do something a little better.
Well, then my biggest concern was if I go to sleep tonight and I might not remember next week, hey, I was going to be with Mr. Latham.
No.
I'm going to put it in part of my head where I can remember when you can possibly be there. And I'm not rushing you. I'm just.
Yeah, we're just we're kind of waiting on Beaton right there.
Yeah. So we, in other words, we don't need to worry about Beaton until you get answers from Beaton.
Right.
So that could be.
Which we now weeks. Now they started. We're meeting with them every 2 weeks.
We're not meeting last week.
You know, every 2 weeks we're meeting with them and going through this list. So things will. They've had some issues on their stuff they were telling us about. I think Tim's been to 7 different site inspectors and they can't figure out
which good.
Right. And then some of these lists in here, they're like, well, Tim's like, we went to that one. He was like, we can't find what site inspector you went to. Trying to track things like that.
Yeah. That's always never good when you got 10 different opinions.
Right.
I guess the thing to do for you is just whenever you go.
Well, once we get this list,
you can contact whichever one of us you need contact with.
And once we have this list, probably need to have this format of workshop again and kind of look at it. Because once we have that list, we probably should start having a good bit of the PWs rubbed up.
Right.
By that point in time, we'll know which PWs we're going to do in-house because some of them are already so close we could just go finish a job or two and submit the funds. Some of them, the way we're going to package in PWs, they might be all the things we haven't even touched over here.
Right. That's where we can tell when you're ready.
Okay, anything else we need to cover? Looking at it, I'm going to reach out to MRB and see if they would have some availability potentially next week. We don't have a regular commissioner's court meeting scheduled for next week, but if they've got some availability to come in and talk to us about where we are with RCP and you know, what are the next steps? What do they need from us? Because that's what I don't know. I don't know what they need from us as the next step moving forward. That would be the next one to look at from my standpoint. But anything else that the... No, oh, they're all they're A, B, C, any of those.
So, so B, you are kicking that down the road, giving get them to be here to figure out what their next steps are.
Yes, yeah. unless you know something that I just.
So I did get one update from the DLO yesterday. There are some rule changes coming on that RCP program.
Surprise. Yeah, surprise.
Good for us this time. Amazing as that might be. They're going to extend the timeline to have a couple of deliverables done in that project, which is going to be good for us because subdivision regulations and the finalization building codes, we're going to have a little more time to get those done than the initial that under each proposed rule change. Or we understand that they are finalized rule changes. We're going to be getting that, should be getting that official from the government, probably via an email. That part of the program. And we do have a new reviewer on our LHMP closeout and shared all the Dropbox folders with her yesterday. And she has reviewed those. I owe her one thing. She's also reviewing the procurement on the RCP. And there's one thing I owe her on that, but we do have a new reviewer person there. Jim has gotten some help in those areas, which they needed because they've had Tammy's vote so low. You know, she's always been very helpful. There's just so much to be moved. They went up over at 7 o'clock last night, so she's doing all she can do. But she's got some help now, so hopefully we'll have that LHMP money drawn down pretty short order. And have a little more time to finish some of the things in the RCP program than we initially have. Yeah. So that's my thing. One thing that we do need to discuss sooner rather than later is floodplain. We do not have a floodplain administrator. We desperately need one. That's really not under the RCP program. In the RCP program, we're going to review our floodplain ordinance and consider changes to it. But immediately, we have a floodplain ordinance in place. We do not have a floodplain administrator. And we have permits on the deck right now that we need addressed. So, separate apart from the RCP program and reviewing our floodplain ordinance, pretty short order, like the next commissioner's board meeting. We need to have a plan for a floodplain administrator. These are not permanents that the bridge office are going to get it approved. They're not exceptions, so they really don't need to come through the commissioner's court for exceptions. They just need to be them through. They're for pipeline that's coming through. They're all engineers, they're all underground, they're all either open cuts, they're coming back, or molars that you're doing under the streams. They're in the floodplain, though. The more pits are going to be in the floodplain, and they've got to get a permit. But,
did we not previously approve a professional services agreement?
Yeah, well, I think with three.
And we saw the commissioner's court awarded the bid to three engineering firms that responded, but that does not execute a contract with them for services. I do not know that we have, I think we have an executed contract with one of the three. That's my recollection. And I do know for a fact that the Coyote County Commissioner's Court has not named a floodplain administrator for Coyote County.
Yeah.
I think that needs to be known. We've got to have somebody designated to sign half of Coyote County as floodplain administrator.
Yeah, we had some discussion about it probably about a month ago. I had to put on the agenda and we had some discussion, but no actions taken on.
Okay. Well, I
need to follow up on that. And then the C, other grants, the DRRP, which we've talked about before, the call for projects has come out. We have until November 21st, I believe, to submit projects to the GLO. So this is for the these are the old funds that were pulled back from the previous disasters of the GLO that they are looking to. They got HUD to change the rules because for the previous HUD loans did not allow them to be able to expend funds, basically. So the HUD did approve modified rules the other day, and so GLO has announced this DRRP program, which we talked about the other day. Last Monday, I believe, when they had a, not this past Monday, Monday before, they had a conference call on it. The judge went to a meeting with the GLO a while back, and they listed with him some about, wanting us to apply for some of these funds. We've run through the scoring matrix and our call we had here a while back, and Mr. Michael had, we knew the scoring matrix was coming and we were not necessarily going to score the best on it. But it's not terrible. Our scoring's not terrible. It's just that I don't think it's as bad as it seems, because a lot of those counties that are going to score really, really good are the ones that couldn't spend the funds to start with. They got pulled back from them. So I don't know what the chances are of them actually applying for these funds. There's not a lot of money. I mean, it's $4 million in one pot, $5 million in another, $500,000, as the judge said, is the minimum. Project amount that you can apply for. Everything I can gather, talking to people that know a lot more about it than I do, is there's no procurement need right now. It's a presentation of a project right now. You just present your project. Here's this project we're interested in doing. Give them enough information to score it, which is mostly canned information. It's your county's information that falls into the scoring matrix. It's really not that project specific in the scoring matrix. A couple of things are, but not near all of them in the scoring matrix. So, at some point in the near future, the deadline is November 21st. Commissioner of the Court wants to go after some of those funds. I certainly don't think it will hurt anything to apply. All I can do is tell us no again. And there are all the eligible activities, as always, blood drainage, water, wastewater, street improvements, permanently affixed emergency communications equipment, rehabilitation, reconstruction, and new construction, housing, there's a bunch of housing. You get extra points if it's housing authority project. But then again, a lot of those projects that have the opportunity to apply for that, I use projects in all sense of the term, they had their chance and they didn't get their money spent a lot. And if they're not, I don't know that they'll apply for these funds. They're going to score the best if they do. A project in the projects on the coast is going to score the highest. Yeah. But I don't know that they have any bandwidth left to do much. So that's something the court probably needs to think about now. There's 10%. There's 10% match on these projects, and you don't have to agree to the 10% match. You just get what you want to do.
I'm going to reach out to the city of Gatesville and the city of Copper's Cove. They have, well, the entire city of Gatesville meets the low to moderate income criteria. I mean, they just do. There are portions of Copper's Cove that meet that criteria as well. I believe the figure that we were given in our last meeting was that the county as a whole comes out to 50.26, 50.7, something like that. And that threshold that they're looking at is 51%. But again, to what Mr. Belt is saying, this is a submission. It's not an application. So we can submit projects. You're limited to three. And we can submit up to three projects for initial ranking. And in February of 25, the GLO will make their determination, and then they will send you an invitation to apply. So the November 21st deadline is the submission of up to three projects for review. It is not an application. It's all fixed into their format. And then they will rank, grade, whatever their process is. And if we make the cut line, then in February, they will issue an invitation to apply. So we, again, on the kind of the larger scale of things, the minimum for each one of those projects that you would be submitting has to have a cost basis of $500,000. So the minimum, if we submitted for three projects, 1.5 million at the minimum, and if we chose to get the points for the match funds, that's 150,000 that we would be committing to. Is that the way you understood it, Mr. Bell? And you're.
There's not a lot of counties that qualify for these funds. So it's just going to be a matter of figuring out projects that fall within the criteria that the Oregon has for.
Probably an unfair question. We don't know the answer to. Is GLO going to be the ultimate decision maker, or does HUD have their hand in it?
So going
to you know where I'm going. We don't have a good track record when it comes to HUD stuff.
HUD's going to definitely review the. HUD has came up with this new criteria, or I guess in conjunction with the GLO. Because the GLO had tried previously to spend this on in the program departments and I'm paraphrasing all this. I'm sure that it's not completely accurate, but you know, GLO went back to that and said, well, you're gonna have to change the rules because we can't spend this money, you won't let us spend it, you're gonna have to change the rules. And so HUD and GLO negotiated these new rules and finally approved them the other day, understanding that's what this webinar before last was over, was the new rules, you know, that HUD has allowed GLO to try to expend these funds under now. Because they're just sitting down there at GLO, and GLO's tried to spend them, and the HUD said, no, you can't do it that way. No, you can't do it that way.
Right.
And so now the HUD said, well, you can do it this way. We'll do this out. Here's the program requirements that HUD has now said we can expend these funds under. But I would. I would like to look at it. And when they come through, and make sure everything's just exactly like they want it. And that it really does meet the requirement of new rules to place. And so, just like when the conversation is going to go, just like the CBDG MIT conversation has gone on these areas of LMI. So, there, if you look at the, you know, if you get off into the weeds on the LMI area, there are different ways to show that there's, you know, it's either right in the LMI or there's a benefit to the LMI, even though the project's not in the LMI. And so there's different ways to show that. And so HUD is going to ask those questions yet again, you know, just like they're doing on CBDG MIT. And they're going to question, well, how does this project that's not right in the middle of the LMI help the LMI? And then they're going to say, well, this is not good enough. And then they're going to say, well, that's not good. And then they're going to say, well, that's not good. And at some point, they may or may not give in and let it go. So if it is a project that we can, well, shouldn't even say that, because we have a project that's right in the middle of the LMI. Now, actually, in their defense, they really didn't question project in the LMI here in the city of Gatesville. They did ask us to clarify, then when they realized that the clarification was in the box in the top right of the map that they were provided, they backed off because they were questioning it because we didn't give them enough information. And then when we told them all that information you're requesting is in that little box in the top right of that map you're looking at, they're like, oh yeah, there it is right there. Yes, this is good. And they moved on. So unless it's a project right in the middle of the LMI block, we're going to have to fight that same fight with this. So like Judge said, there's Gatesville, good opportunity.
Yep.
Certain areas in Conference Cove, they're right in the middle of blocks. Over there on the east side of 116 there, back up in there between 116 and the golf course back over in there. There's certainly some very good opportunity areas. They're going to score really good. And Other than that, we better make sure that we can clearly identify the benefit to an LMI area for a project if we are not in.
The new acronym is LMA. That's low to moderate area. And that's what he's talking about.
Right.
The, you know, that peripheral, they're trying to, well, I'm not going to, but that's the.
We've had some discussion amongst all of us about the permanently affixed emergency communications equipment. As y'all know, the Coral County Sheriff's Office can certainly use some help with funding for communications, as well as some of the radios that are expensive. I don't know, we haven't got that fleshed out very good, what we would be able to do in that area for an application or project in that regard, or exactly how we'll define the benefit area. I think we could probably, we're close enough on the LMI. We have enough low to moderate income areas of service. If we had a more broad emergency equipment project, that would be a large area, if not the entire area, I think we might be able to make a bit of a collection sometime. But. I guess most pressing that regard is probably the next commissioner's court meeting is the, we said it was 2 weeks from today.
Yeah. 11th.
12. 6 is going to be too late. So we're going to need to kind of have some idea about what we want to do by the 12th and give somebody some direction to make those.
I'll have a list of five or six
proper projects, proposed projects for GLA.
I'll pull in a list of five or six for your consideration at the meeting on the 12th. If there's something that you've thought of that might be applicable, send it to me and we can review that on the 12th. The call for project submission is pretty simple. I mean, it's not a complicated thing. And again, just to reiterate that, all we're doing is submitting it to see if it's going to get picked, and we would get notification in April. I mean, I'm sorry, February. So under A, B, or C for workshop purposes, anything else for discussion needs to be covered. Okay. Didn't have it specifically on here, but for reports, but just want to go quick round the room. Commissioner Matthews, anything? You got Commissioner Rowe? Commissioner Basham, Commissioner Kim. One quick one. I didn't have an opportunity to consult. I was a little bit confused on some actions that the court still needs to take. But I've scheduled a very brief meeting on Friday morning at 8:40. I say it's a brief meeting. I think it's going to be a brief meeting. We filed the agenda this morning. There's two items to consider. It has to do with the purchase of real estate and authorizing a payment if we so choose to do that real estate. And again, I was not trying to do anything underhanded, but to meet an offer that we've made, we would need to take some action. So at least two of you can be present on Friday morning at 8:40.
I don't think I'll be here.
I will be. I'll be.
Okay. I mean,
you have a quorum.
That And it's not anything that you haven't already seen. You've been exposed to it. I'm not trying to be cryptic to anyone. I'm just saying that, you know, you've seen all the documentation. So we're not going to resend documentation, but that's based off of guidance that was provided to Mr. Belt to execute on behalf of the county. So that being said, any last alibis?
Does I realize that RFP has it. She's okay. Read it as well. It's got two spots on there for you to sign.
Yes, sir.
Paper, put the notice in it, and then I'll work with her and get it out to all of the people. And but just need probably proofread it one more time. I'm going to go up there and talk to her just a minute to get it ready. I'll get a copy of it with them. Here, I'll get a copy of it with her here this morning.
Okay.
And you're going to reach out to MRB?
Yes. Yes. I'm going to try to line up MRB, NRS, because they've got a hydrology piece going, as well as representatives from Blackland, and we may even get Middle Trinity. You know, because I mean, all those entities need to be cross talking on some of those pieces of our RCP. And so we can make sure that everybody's got face to face and they know who needs to be cross talking. So, yes, and we'll get that set up. I'll send out a couple dates to y'all, see what works best with your schedule after I contact those four entities. Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone, for your participation today. That concludes the business of the court, and we stand adjourned.